ABC Radio Darwin.
Look, I think this is something that is a little bit different, and it's deliberately so. It's my story of learning how to become a man without the male role model around. So it's a fairly candid storytelling show. It's not traditional comedy. It's not traditional stand-up, and it's not a TED Talk. It's probably a fusion of all of those things. I call it compassionate comedy.
Right.
It's the story of me and learning to grow up and deal with life after my father killed himself, and learning how to be the best man I could be without that guidance from him.
And that was guidance that you felt was lacking? Did you notice that at the time?
I noticed it at the time that there wasn't guidance from a father. I definitely noticed that. My parents split up when I was 11. And so from that age, my dad was just someone that we saw on school holidays. He moved away. So all of those formative years where a male who may have his father on a pedestal, as I did, is looking for that sort of guidance and support and encouragement. For me, most of that time, it was absent from a male. The true hero of my story, and I talk about this towards the latter part of the show, is my mother. She had me when she was 18 and three sons by the age of 24, 25. And I learned how to be a good man because I was raised by a good, strong woman. And I think that's one of the really strong things that I want people to take out from that if there is a same gender role model absent from your life, it doesn't necessarily matter. I think I'm a better man for being raised by a woman than I would have been if I was raised predominantly by a man.
Because as soon as you say that absent male role model, I'm thinking, oh, will same-sex couples be upset by hearing that that's important? But it's in how you look at it.
It is entirely how you look at it. I think anybody who is raised in an environment with love, support and encouragement is going to turn out to be a reasonably decent human being. And I don't think gender is as big a part of that as a lot of people might think. And for me, I'm a good person because I'm a man raised by a woman. And if I was raised by two women, I'd probably be twice as good as I am. So I don't think there's any issue with what gender your parents are.
Did you just tell your mum that she needs to go and hook up with a lady?
I think I did. So she's that might be news to her, but I just want her to be happy. So if she finds happiness with another woman, then that's great. I'll give them both a big hug and kiss.
Now, the show was part of, as well as being featured in a few fringe festivals, it's part of Melbourne Comedy Festival. Is it a comedy?
I don't think it's a – it's not a comedy that people – it's not what people might expect from a comedy show. It's not me standing up there cracking jokes about what a dag of a father I am and how amazing my kids are and all that sort of stuff. There's comedy everywhere. I did a writing workshop with Tim Ferguson from the Doug Anthony All-Stars quite a while ago, and he talked about how there's one moment in the movie Schindler's List, arguably one of the more serious movies ever made, and there's a moment of comedy, of levity in amongst Schindler's List, and really opened my eyes to the fact that there is comedy everywhere if we're open to it. And the jokes and the laughs in my show don't come from the fact that my dad did commit suicide. You know, there's no humour in that. But the humour for me comes from, well, what sort of situations do I then find myself in where a father's guidance is not there? And what's the comedy in those situations without that? So I think there is comedy everywhere if we're open to it. And hopefully if I do my job well, there'll be plenty of laughs along the way, as well as a few more somber moments of reflection and pausing. But an hour of that sort of heavy stuff is not ideal. So again, if I do my job well, it'll be broken up with riotous laughter throughout the hour.
So it's still not a show that will avoid having those heavy moments?
No, not at all. I might be a bit of a sadist, but as a performer, one of the things I enjoy most about being on stage is that moment of vacuum when you drop a big bomb in a narrative sense. I find a moment of real connection with an audience when there is just complete silence after you have delivered something very heavy. And I think I actually probably prefer that than loads of laughter personally, because there's no more solid guarantee that everybody is listening and wants to know what happens next than when they are completely silent and watching you and pretty much asking for you to tell them something interesting next.
This is your first show, JC. So was this your career path before?
No, and that's a very good question. I was working in not-for-profit financial services for about the last 12 years. I'd always wanted to be a writer or a storyteller when I was growing up. I remember saving up my pocket money and going to buy stationery because I'm a bit of a dork. And I'd write transcripts of pretend football matches where my dad was always the hero and kicked the goal after the siren to win the game. And a few times I made myself feature as the mascot drafted onto the field to replace an injured player and save the day, that sort of thing.
Yes.
So I did always want to write stories and tell people stories, but I kind of got to late high school and realised that there probably wasn't going to be a lot of financial success immediately in that sort of area. So I got into professional writing and business communications, and that's what I did for 12 years. And the reason that I'm not doing that anymore and why I am sharing my story in the hope that it helps other people feel less alone than they might is, like many people, 2016 was a real big year of change for me. My marriage ended and I was sort of getting to a crossroads with my mental health. Everything was really feeling like it was piling up on top of me. And with the marriage ending and me moving out of the family home and me needing to take a few significant steps backward to focus on my mental health, I thought, well, if most of my life's changing, then why not change the last little bit? And that is to do something I'm truly passionate about and that brings me joy and see what happens. I don't want to have any regrets. I didn't want to look back in a few years' time and think, wow, I kind of just treaded water there for a couple of years when I could have pursued my dreams and see if they could come true.
On ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, you're hearing from JC Clapham. JC, for you personally, talking about this over and over, is it helpful or does it mean that you're constantly living in that moment?
Really good question. When I first did this show, I did 9 shows of it at the Melbourne Fringe in late September, early October of last year. And I was really, that's probably the second lowest I've ever been in my life. And it was only a few months after my marriage had ended. And it was really quite testing, but I persevered. And, you know, to be perfectly frank, the first 3 days of the first 3 shows, I spent pretty much in a ball on my lounge room floor crying. And I had to make a few calls at various points just to try and get some help to keep me going. But as show 3 turned into show 4, into show 5, I noticed that it was really, really cathartic. And I, by the end of that run of 9 shows, it sort of surprised me just how at peace I was with my dad's death 19 years ago. And so I think if I had have made a decision halfway through that first run of shows, I probably would have pulled out or not done it again. But somewhere I found the, I guess, the desire to meet my commitment at least and do all of the shows. And by the end of it, I felt amazing. And now it's a real source of enjoyment for me. I don't relive those moments and those days and or years every time I do the show. But what I instead focus on now that I'm comfortable with the material and the story, what I focus on is the audience getting out of this what I hope they are. And if they're not, then I'll change tack. But it's far less about me now and more about how the audience is receiving it.
Given that you weren't living with your dad from 11 to 16 when he died, how much do you know about what he was going through?
I knew nothing at the time. Over the years, we sort of pieced together little bits and pieces. And just in the last 12 months, I've been talking to my dad's siblings. Dad was the youngest of 6. And I've sort of picked up a few little extra insights that they as adults were able to look back on after Dad had died. My dad was always a very, I guess, fluctuatingly intense and relaxed person. You know, again, looking back in hindsight, there were clear signs, but that's with today's education, looking at yesterday's people. So I guess I didn't really know a lot at the time, and it certainly came as a big shock and a big right hook to the jaw. But I know a lot more now about how he got to the place he got to. And this is why I do what I do now. I mean, there's some people have suggested that I talk about the way my dad died too much and that I talk about my own mental health too much. But I made a vow just before I did this show the first time that in not talking about his challenges, the outcome for my father was that he took his own life. And so if I want the opposite outcome, which is to stay alive for my three kids, then I'm going to take the exact opposite approach that he did, and I'm going to talk about it openly to anybody who wants to listen, and even some of those who don't, because they're probably the ones who need to hear it the most.
When you talk about that, today's knowledge being applied to the past, how much did you even understand the idea of depression when you were 16? I mean, we're a similar age, and it was definitely talked about, but maybe not as much as now, and maybe not in country Victoria.
No, I knew nothing about it. I have a few relatives who from time to time went through particularly sad periods of their life, and that was about my only understanding. The year that my dad died, 1998, I was in year 11, and he died at the end of March, and that's sort of where I started, I guess, to learn a little bit about depression and mental health being something that you could indirectly die from. But there was a girl in the year level above me at school. She was in year 12, and in August of 1998, she took her own life. And I didn't know her very well at all, but we had some mutual friends. And so the school I went to was absolutely amazing at that time in throwing their arms around her friends and her family, but also more broadly around the whole school community. And so we had a very big education piece around support for our peers and not being as reticent to put our hand up and ask for someone to listen to us when we needed to. So I think the silver lining of that traumatic event of some of my school chums was that right at the time I probably really needed it, it was a big topic of discussion. And I think I really benefited from the fact that our school community as a whole was confronting something that they hadn't needed to before.
Looking back on what you've been learning about your father, how does that compare to your own then mental health experience?
Well, Dad didn't talk about it at all. My mother tells me that during the time they were married, she tried to help Dad and encourage Dad to draw on the help of some professionals and some draw on his family and friends more than what he was, which was not a lot. And so given that things turned out the way for him that they did, I don't want that outcome. So my mental health it's the foundation for me having a successful and happy life. I know that. I'm okay with that. I don't mind. To me, it's my diabetes or it's my low blood pressure. It's just the thing that I have to manage so that everything else can hang off it nicely or as nicely as it can.
No one ever says to the diabetic, oh, you're checking your blood sugar levels again. You're pricking
exactly
your
right.
finger again, are you?
Absolutely. Maybe you should just stop trying. Maybe you should just try not to think about it so much and your blood sugar levels will be fine.
Yeah.
It's that sort of maybe coming from a place of unawareness or lack of education, but those sorts of comments don't help. But they don't always come from a place of malice, so we just try and tackle them as we confront them.
How do you talk to your kids about it? Well, do you talk to your kids about it?
Yeah, good question. I have started talking to them about it more recently. I've got three kids. My two sons are 8 and 7, and my daughter is 4 and a half. And we were watching a movie, and I've talked about it with them as the opportunities have presented. I've chosen not to manufacture the conversations, but we were watching Red Dog True Blue not so long ago, and early on in the movie, sorry if I'm ruining it for anyone, early on in the movie, the main character talks about how his father died suddenly, and this kid was like 11 at the time or something. His father died suddenly, and both he and his mother were really sad, obviously, but his mother was particularly sad and so sad that she had to go into a special hospital where people looked after her. And one of my kids asked me why you needed to go to hospital for being sad. And so I paused the movie and we spoke about it for 10 or 15 minutes and I explained to them what depression was and that it was something that really can affect people and that it is a medical thing. It's an illness or a disease. It's not just someone who overthinks things or has too much time on their hands and gets lost in their thoughts. And I talked about with them the fact that they know my father died before they were born. They don't know how yet. I haven't tackled that. I don't think they're quite old enough. But I talked about how my dad was someone who was very, very sad on and off, and particularly before he died, he was really, really sad and probably should have gone either into hospital or spent more time with doctors to try and work through his sadness, but he didn't. And then I reminded them of what I was like in the last 12 months or so before I moved out, and I was near useless as a productive father and as a supportive husband. And that was purely because I made the decision at the time that I was aware I had a fixed amount of energy and a fixed amount of mental acuity, and I dedicated that to keeping my job and keeping the income rather than being present in the family home and the family environment. And so I pointed that out to my kids, that remember when Daddy was sleeping a lot on the weekends and when sometimes I would just be really sad and I'd lie on the couch and fall asleep and I didn't do as much with them as I do now. And they understood that me being very, very sad before I moved out was me dealing with depression. And so having that instance of the movie presenting the opportunity to have that conversation, I think was really crucial, rather than me sort of trying to bring it up with them randomly. They're smart kids. Kids are very perceptive. When I pointed out the symptoms that I had and the ways that it was affecting me, they understood that that was sadness and not me being a crap dad. So it was actually they got sick of the conversation before I did, which is pretty typical of kids. But I felt a lot lighter afterwards and they understood it, which is terrific.
And
so
that's
how I talk about it.
I bet your show is the catalyst for that conversation for the grown-ups that come and see it too. What do you hear from people after they've been to your show?
I hear all sorts of positive things. I haven't had anybody say anything bad. That's not an invitation, Darwin. you're lovely people. Don't suggest for a moment that that'll happen. I'm a big hugger and I get really excited because a lot of men, big burly men, come up to me after the show with tears in their eyes, a stony-faced expression, and just give me a massive hug. And if they can bring themselves to utter a sentence or two, it's usually something along the lines of, I know where you've been, thank you for sharing your story. Or I had a guy in his 60s see the show in Adelaide and he came up to me and said that his father had taken his own life only a couple of years before. His dad would have been in his 80s. And I obviously don't know all of the circumstances surrounding that, but he was very effusive in telling me that it was a good thing to be talking about. So that warms my heart. It takes a bit of a toll, but I write down all of those interactions when I get home after a show, and I kind of go to those when I'm struggling myself a little bit and just give myself a bit of a pep up.
Well, I hope there are a lot of hugs coming your way on Friday night. JC, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
ABC Radio, Darwin.
Don't forget that.